I can't drive this thing.
Radio kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Aha, we fooled you. You thought that strange QAnon lady was going to come up and do the news. Oh, no, no, no. Rumor has it she was terribly injured in an accident while fighting the war on Christmas. By the way, there are only 10 days left in the war on Christmas. Remember, kill a tree before it kills you. And so let's actually begin the show now with good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 87 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBTQQS version of Conversation Radio. That's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer, queer questioning, and straight. Exclusively on listener-supported head-on radio network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is indeed Friday, December the 14th. So if you are listening on a Friday evening shortly after 9 p.m., which is December the 14th, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and talk to myself and to the guest, which I will be introducing her at the bottom of the hour. Our guest will be joining us at the bottom of the hour this evening. It's Nadine Smith, by the way, from Equality, Florida. We are going to be talking about the fact that the fundies have finally gotten enough signature petitions to put the gay marriage issue on the ballot in the 2008 elections, which of course is never good. They want a amendment. It's to ban it completely. You know, we'll get on that with Nadine when we talk to her. That will be at the bottom of the hour. I'll give out the toll-free line numbers then. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to the guests' websites also. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as we speak. We have Cobwebs and ELO, and we have Frozy and Jersey and myself, Lauder J, Nanette, Poppy, Ralphs, and Randy D in the room this evening. And if you're not logged into the Head On Radio Network chat room, you are indeed missing quite a party. we're rolling the disco balls right now. It's so nice to be welcome to the Strictly Confidential show in the chat room with the myriad of rotating glass disco balls. That makes my day. Let's see, where was I? You'll find links on strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for the Head On Radio Network, where you can actually support the network by using the PayPal buttons that you'll find located at headonradionetwork.com. And there's a link to that on strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The PayPal buttons are on the right-hand side of the screen, so if they're the right-hand side of your screen, you may have to scroll to the right to see it. I'm not sure what the resolution was. Apparently that was an issue earlier today. And you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a small part. And it's 2 hours of... there are really not words for it, are there, listeners? You'll find links to the Strictly Confidential MySpace page there, and links to help you locate the music that you hear on this show. And let's see, I should bring you up to date on Wicked. I received an email from one of our listeners. Kathy in Jacksonville was telling me that she had read Wicked, and she absolutely loved it, and she was thrilled to hear I was reading it. And I should confess now, I'm actually not reading it. You see, it's gotten to the point that about the only free time I have is when I'm driving. Of course, since I live out in the woods, it's about, 20, 25 minutes to town and 20, 25 minutes back from town, which is almost like a wasted hour every time I go into town. So I actually got it from the bookmobile on CD, books on CD. So it's actually being read to me. Peel me a grape, Beulah. It's actually being read to me, and at this point... if you'll recall, there's a little green girl in this story right now, and obviously the little green girl is the witch. And the little green girl was born to a Munchkin family. It's a fairly conservative Munchkin family, and they're very deeply disturbed about the green girl. And there's this talk and rumor of the woman having been raped by elves, who lives somewhere over the hill in the forest, and. You know, that's all I can tell you right now. The book is developing slowly, but I tell you, there's some wonderful images. It's a great book, Wicked. It's about if you haven't heard me ranting on it before, it's the Wizard of Oz, but it's from the Wicked Witch's perspective, and so it's my kind of book, right up my alley. Had a great time last evening on the horn section. Bob and I had a wonderful chat. We're both in rare form. That's what I was away for a few days, so I guess we were ready for one of our wild and woolly conversations. I hope you enjoyed it, too. The horn section, of course, follows Strictly Confidential Radio and is a live show. It's an unscripted live roundtable, if you will, between the hosts. Sometimes it's just Bob and I. Sometimes it's Bob and I and John. Other times it's other of the hosts. We have so many. I hate to even try to go down the list. I'm sure to misplace some of them. But I should point out to you that tomorrow evening, I'll do it while I'm thinking about it. Tomorrow evening we will have, of course, Billy Shear's show, Billy Shear's Night Sounds. Now that is at 9 p.m. and it's a music show that runs from 9 till midnight. An incredible program. Billy Shears is indeed our music guru. It's very eclectic. He plays music and also describes and talks about the artists and various stories that relate to their lives. It's a wonderful, wonderful program. Also, over the weekend, there's Rick's Place, and Rick Goodner, and the horn psychologist will also be there. And Matt Sowards will also be there. And it's an interesting weekend. If you've got time to, even if you can't make it, the chat room, by the way, is open, and it runs on Saturdays as the shows go through rotation. If you can't make it in on a Saturday evening with your family, we appreciate your listening at any time. And I've just about come to the conclusion that Mike Huckabee is the devil. I honestly have. In the beginning, I kind of laughed him off. He was another raging fundamentalist, of which we were all so exquisitely tired of. And I was also conned into the whole, maybe that's not the right word, but I was lulled into the whole bit about how the right-wing Christian fundies were becoming increasingly irrelevant. If you'll recall, I used that term many times. Well, it looks like they're rallying again, and they are all rallying around Mike Huckabee. Now, if you'll recall, we did a story a while back saying that the Christian conservatives would actually vote for a third-party candidate if one would run because they didn't like the particular selection of Republican candidates that is in the queue right now. I have a little story about that, but that's basically what it says, that they would vote for an independent. I think they were looking for a Dobson or one of that ilk to step up to the plate, but they have in fact now discovered the depth, or in our case, the lack of it. We would perceive it as lack of it. They perceive it as depth. To Mike Huckabee's absolute insane right wing, it's just amazing. So I've put on my glasses now, and I think I can tell you a couple of stories before we have Nadine Smith on. In fact, these stories actually relate to Nadine. Shortly before he announced his bid to the White House, you see, Mike Huckabee told a group of Christian conservatives that he has the toughest position against gay marriage of any of the Republican candidates. And he said, and I quote, "Unless Moses comes down with two stone tablets from Brokeback Mountain to tell us something different, we need to keep our understanding of marriage." He also said that we were finding out more about this when he was the Arkansas governor, that we're coming under greater security. How can I put it? As the governor, people are looking at him more and more closely about his remarks in the past about gay and lesbians. Now, you see, he was a minister for what was it, 12 years? I have more details about that, but somehow all of those sermons have disappeared. They're just not available anymore. These large churches, it's all recorded. Hell, in the little Miccosukee Methodist church, a little, one-room wooden church that I'm talking about, there's a sound system there. We burn it to CD and to cassette every Sunday, and there's a record. There's a record. They just conveniently cannot locate his comments. But there are a few comments that are coming to life. In 1992, he said that gays lived an aberrant, unnatural, and sinful lifestyle. And of course, we have talked extensively about the fact he said that AIDS patients should be isolated. Even though, of course, this was in, around 92, this was after the federal government had told everyone that AIDS is not spread by casual contact. Virtually everyone knew that. Even the uneducated people knew that. Mark Levine was going on about it the other day, saying that even the uneducated people knew about it. Not to mention someone who's the governor of Arkansas, he, of course, knew about it. But in fact, I think he was a little bit freer with his speech in those days. And I think back then he was perhaps more revealing of who he actually is. He also said to the group just before announcing for the White House, he said on his website, actually, he said, "No other candidate has supported traditional marriage more consistently and steadfastly than I have. While Massachusetts is allowing homosexuals to marry, I got a constitutional amendment passed in Arkansas in 2002 defining marriage as between one man and one woman, which is what we're up against here in Florida on the next ballot. Huckabee said he opposes civil unions because he views them as legitimizing same-sex relationships in the eyes of the state. And when you create validity and you actually put some sort of government approval on the behavior, I think that sets a different set of rules. And he also goes on to say that it's a lifestyle decision, et cetera, which we've all heard before. No need to elaborate about that. Huckabee says that if gay couples use legal documents such as power of attorney to establish asset transfers and other benefits, and otherwise it would be okay with him. He said it would be the same as a civil union. He said, I understand that if there is a same-sex couple, I don't personally support that. It's their business. If, what are we, theoretical now? we're some sort of Republican hypothesis, like the Loch Ness Monster. I understand if there are same-sex couples. Now, I don't personally support that. That's their business. But, you know, power of attorney would give them a chance to visit one another at the hospital and transfer assets. Bull, 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 bull. We've been through all the details. We've talked about how little protection there is with these documents. Marriage solves over 1,000 legal problems with one signature that you simply cannot duplicate without hundreds of documents and going to various attorneys and agencies all over the state and perhaps even to the Capitol to accomplish. And then you'll still find out you've left something out. He says a lot of things could be handled that don't require a civil union. He's been going through a lot of criticism about what he said in 1992 about the AIDS patients being isolated. He said that, of course, now he's saying, since he's in the spotlight and he's trying to appear to the moderates and the holy rollers, he says, with great regret and anxiety, if I thought any of my comments were hurtful, if I thought any of my comments were hurtful or in any way added to the already incredible pain that families have felt, regardless of how they contracted AIDS, meaning that he's subtly pointing out there's the good way to have AIDS, which is, of course, hemophilia and blood transfusions, any number of medical conditions that might require that. And then there's the bad way, which involves being a drug addict or being, of course, addicted to homosexuality. We established that the other day, that's what the recovery centers are pushing, the fact that we are addicted. So, regardless of how they contracted AIDS, I would have great regret if I thought my comments. In other words, he stopped short of an apology, and many of the AIDS activist organizations were demanding the apology. But, you know, Republicans always just flit by, sort of a hee-hee-hee, wink and a nod apology, and it's always code to their sick base. The Associated Press provided further details on Huckabee's response to a 1992 survey where Huckabee also expressed his opposition to heterosexual couples living together and calling it demeaning. I reject it. He's climbed to the top of the polls in Iowa, which is a large evangelical community, but he is also he and the other Republican candidates are in quite a quandary about what to do about New Hampshire. They don't want to come out as too anti-gay because it's a more secular state, and they legalized civil unions last May. But yet they have to rally the base. Oh, the conflicts! Oh, the conflicts! Huckabee has been speaking out publicly against gays for the last three decades. Going back to 1970, see, back in 70, he was the chief spokesman for evangelist James Robison. Yes, Robison made headlines around the world when he said, it was back in 1980, he said, he was sick and tired of perverts and the liberals and the leftists and the communists coming out of the closet. He said, it's time for God's people to come out of the closet and change America. And you see, this, of course, Robinson's comments drew lots and lots of fire, but it was Huckabee's job to defend Robinson. He worked with him, that he was the public relations, and defend him he did. He backed him 100% in his statements, although softened the blow some with some of the groups. I tell you, I'm really beginning to believe that Huckabee is in fact the devil. Huckabee is, rather, Robinson said in a recent statement, but, you know, getting on Robinson for just a second, he said, I'm totally gracious now, and I don't make comments like that anymore. If you have trouble loving a homosexual, you may need one in your family. Oh, God. And that's the old thing about coming out, but hell, that doesn't always work. Oh, what was his name? Alan Keyes kicked his daughter to the curb over it. Another wonderful Republican candidate. Huckabee said at 94 that he was disappointed that AIDS prevention classes in schools did not state that homosexuality were illegal in Arkansas. Oh, that'll stop them. The Kathy Webb, who's a Little Rock Democrat, she was elected. She's the first openly gay legislator in the state's history, said Huckabee doesn't seem to have a whole lot of tolerance and goodwill toward gay people. And at this point, he's trying to suppress his background. And he has certainly toned it down. But I think we can safely say that these are his deep-seated feelings. He says, I want to make sure that when we look at a disease, whether it's AIDS, diabetes, or cancer, we look at it from the macro perspective, and we don't just single out one thing that affects America. You know, there are only about 5,000 people a year that get AIDS. That's what he said. Centers for Disease Control report that there were 42,514 new AIDS cases and 13,064 deaths from the disease in 2004 alone. And the most recent year for data shows that about 1.5 million people in the United States have been infected with AIDS since 1981, resulting in more than 500,000 deaths, of which I know some of those people. And some of those people were very dear to me. And I have a list here of things he said at the Family Research Values Voter Summit. And this is one of the reasons, Nadine Smith is a very, very brave woman. I'll introduce her, and I'll tell you some things about her background after we come back to the, let's see. I'm not sure. Sure, Bob, that's fine. I can't get to my keyboard. I have papers on it. Sure, Bob, that's fine. Okay, and let's see, where was I? I'll be introducing her, Nadine Smith, at when we come back from the bottom of the hour break. Now, you see, she's a very, very brave person, and in fact, I have some audio from Nadine when she was at the Family Research Council Voters Value Summit. Remember, we did a section on the Voter Value Summit that took place in South Florida earlier this year. It was nothing but a huge gay bashing sessions with meetings on the homosexual agenda, et cetera, et cetera. So just prior to the Family Research Council Voters Value Summit began, Nadine Smith and her organization, in her capacity of representing Florida, Nadine Smith and some of the other folks and some of the other Christian or gay Christian organizations went and spoke in front of the building that the Value voters were going to meet in. And I have some audio of that. They're really quite brave. After she makes a statement, you'll hear her dealing with a man who's trying to come up and speak also. And the rules were set ahead of time that, there would be some discussion later on when they were both inside the building and their people were there. But basically he wasn't welcome to get up there and use their microphones and their speaker systems and to talk to their audience about what we all know oh so well regarding their position on who we are and how we love. In any case, it shows a lot of courage too. After this segment, they sing "This Little Light of Mine." And for them to actually sing a little sort of a Sunday school kind of hymn, something simple like that, "This Little Light of Mine," in the face of something like the Values Voter Summit, some of the most powerful gay and lesbian haters in the country, I'm very proud of them. Bob, would you run the audio called Nadine Smith, please?
Listen, I do want to thank everyone because I know people took time off their jobs, and I appreciate the words that closed today, and I think we should take those words with us. But we also have to take with us the very clear image of who is harmed by the consequences, intended or unintended, of what happens here, of what gets preached here. Right now, in that building, as Wayne pointed out, there is somebody who is struggling to be their authentic self. And we know from statistics many of the young people who are put into that environment don't survive it, because every day the people closest to them, the people who are supposed to love and care for them, tell them that they shouldn't exist. We know that children are taken away from their parents for no other reason but anti-gay bigotry. We know in the state of Florida, hate crimes against the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community are an epidemic, an ignored epidemic. Ignored not only by the government, but ignored in places like this where there's an obligation to speak out. When the things you say about gay people translate in the streets into discrimination and into violence, you have a moral obligation to speak out and condemn that kind of attitude and animosity. So I want us to keep these words, not to become the thing that hates us, but never to forget that in those buildings right now, there was someone who walked in and saw us, and that will be their lifeline at some point. And when they come to us to be who they are, we won't reject them. We won't do to them what has been done to so many of us. So thank you all. Stay if you would like. Leave if you would like. And I appreciate your time. Okay. So, yes, the deal is equal time inside when your folks are gathered. Sorry.
The sidewalk, may I not be permitted to respond?
Well, you
I
know.
Promise I will do
no.
more
than one minute. Use our microphone.
You know what? You know what? This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. We said we would end with a song. Those who would wish to stay and listen should, and those who don't should not feel obliged to. And that way, everyone can do at their own free will. All right? So, Cedric, you suggested a song that ends this. You want to lead us in that? Excellent. All right.
I didn't expect to do this, but anyway. I do make melody in my heart as unto the Lord. Who I am.
Make a joyful noise
unto God.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Very brave group of people, in my estimation, to do that in front of the Family Research Council's Value Voters Summit, and to actually turn down the man who tried to insert himself into the comments that were made by Nadine. And it's time to bring her on. Nadine Smith has been the executive director of Equality Florida since it began in 1997. She was the executive director of its predecessor, also the Human Rights Task Force of Florida prior to that. She joined the organization, the task force, in 1993 after serving as one of the four national co-chairs on the 1993 March on Washington and taking part in a historic first-time-ever meeting between LGBT leaders and the sitting president, President Clinton, in the White House. She has been recognized by organizations around the country. She's been recognized by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, a Human Rights Campaign, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the National Black Lesbian and Gay Leadership Forum. She's also an award-winning journalist, and she's syndicated in columns for various LGBT publications. We actually have had in the past Stratton Pulitzer, the deputy director of Equality Florida, on. This is our first time with Nadine Smith. Nadine, welcome to the show.
welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm so pleased to have you here. Nadine, I'm hoping you can help us understand how much trouble we're in, the fact that they've gotten this thing on the ballot. You recall there was a law, there was a passed a couple of years back, that they changed the percentage that was necessary to for the number of signatures to get anything on the ballot to, 60%, I think. And that raised their...
60% plus one now in order to change the Florida Constitution. Which, of course, is good news for us in keeping this bad measure out of the Constitution, for keeping discrimination out of the Constitution, from stopping them from using this as a political wedge issue to drive up conservative voters.
Well,
and basically, that law changed in 2006 in the last election. So not only is it good news that the law changed, that the bar is going to be higher, but it comes at a time when across the country we're seeing a real decline in the number of people who are sort of falling into this far-right election year trick. And most of the states that faced this last time around were able to muster more than 40% of opposition. And, of course, Arizona changed everything by defeating this at the polls. Getting more than half of Arizona voters to defeat it. So I think that the fight in Florida is one we can win. The polling we've seen tells us it's going to be a razor-thin margin, and it really comes down to, will we have enough people who contribute their time and contribute their money to ensure we're able to get the message out about what this amendment really does.
Well, Nadine, I'm told that these folks have actually been able to get these 600,000 signatures, 600,000 and a few over, without hiring any professionals or without hiring staff to go out and gather signatures. This is basically being accomplished through churches. Am I correct in that?
That's true. And in Florida, you get almost 4 years to gather signatures. They originally planned or announced plans to put this on the ballot in 2006. Failed to meet the deadlines. They got a serious cash infusion by the Republican Party, and they've used the various conservative networks in order to gather these signatures. So they've had quite a while to do it. It doesn't come as any surprise. The real surprise, or what has been amazing, is witnessing the number of organizations from all across the state: the Florida Alliance for Retired Americans, the Florida Consumer Action Network, Planned Parenthood, organizations that in Florida, we've never seen a coalition quite this size gather to defeat an amendment that, while it targets, certainly the rhetoric targets the gay community, they've actually chosen language that goes much further than simply reaffirming Florida's longstanding ban on recognizing marriage between same-sex couples. It goes much further than that and threatens to take away protections for all unmarried Floridians, gay or straight. So this is literally an amendment designed to make it harder for people to take care of their loved ones. It doesn't simply say marriage is one man, one woman. It says anything that is the substantial equivalent thereof. And when you try and pin them down about why on earth would you put that in, unless you intended to go after domestic partnership, prevent civil unions, take away benefits, they don't have an answer for that. So they're going to try and obscure what they're really up to, and our job between now and the time every vote gets counted in November is to make sure that Floridians really understand what this measure does and why everybody has a personal stake.
We've seen this in the past where these amendments have been put through, and all along the way there are statements to the effect that this will not affect civil unions, this will not affect elderly folks who are trying to live together in some sort of a partnership, to save the cost of aging. What can I tell you? But that it won't affect any of these. But as soon as they get this amendment through, that's immediately what they turn and do. Has that been your experience also?
Well, absolutely. I think it was August 6th, was a huge wake-up call, certainly for Floridians and I think nationwide, when Michigan suddenly was in the position of having to repeal domestic partnership protections in the wake of passing similar language. We're seeing the same thing in Kentucky, where the very same people who swore up and down that they would do nothing to go after domestic partnership, this was only about one issue, now that it's passed, they've set their sights, the very same people, on eliminating domestic partnership, any kind of recognition other than marriage for folks in Kentucky. So we don't have to guess about what will happen if we don't fight with everything we have to stop this from passing. We just have to look at different states and we'll know exactly what we can expect in Florida. And I don't think we're even done finding out what the consequences are. If you look in Ohio, there was a man arrested for beating up his living girlfriend who argued in court successfully for almost 2 years until we finally lost the case. But he argued that domestic violence enhancements against him for beating up his live-in girlfriend amounted to a recognition of their relationship as equivalent to marriage, and therefore he shouldn't be facing those charges. That may sound ridiculous to us, but they actually had to fight that in Ohio. And the challenge with these kinds of amendments that are vaguely worded, that have these broad-reaching impacts, is we don't know the limits of them, because there's always going to be somebody like the folks in Kentucky pushing as hard as they can once they pass these to eliminate any kind of protections.
Nadine, who are the people in the FloridaForMarriage.org? And by the way, folks, if you wanted to look at that, that's Florida, the number four, marriage.org. Who are these people who are going after the signatures and promoting this so hard? And I understand even the Liberty Council, who we refer to often here, and not sure. In very positive terms, I might add, is involved
sure.
in that.
I mean, it's the usual suspects you would expect. Obviously, this has been a pretty reliable wedge issue, so you expect to see, the Christian Coalition groups, Liberty Council, those organizations. What you don't always expect to see is the Republican Party investing so heavily. I mean, the largest donor to this have bankrolled it, more than $300,000, or somewhere in that range. I think that after 2006, they began to, within the Republican Party, there are those who question whether this is a wise expenditure, whether it'll have the impact as a political wedge that they hope for. You see the governor distancing himself from it. I think that they're beginning to realize that this is by no means the easy path that they may have had in other states. They're seeing a wall of opposition in Florida, the NAACP, the teachers union, labor, civil rights groups, campus groups are all lined up. And in fact, let me just direct folks to fairnessforallfamilies.org, fairnessforallfamilies.org, and it's F-O-R, not a numeral. But if you go there, you can get information on the campaign. You can find out, you can get the exact language of the bill or the amendment. You can find out all the organizations that are a part of it, and you can volunteer to be a part of it. And you know, this really is a fight for everyone. We have an opportunity in Florida to stop this from being used successfully as a political wedge in a battleground state. We have the opportunity to finish the job that Arizona started in defeating this as a reliable wedge issue for the far right. And we have an opportunity to do it by turning what is supposed to be a cattle call for the most conservative voters into a catalyst for the most progressive voters.
You know, facing this over and over again, it seems to never end. Honestly, it's a lot to have to go through. I'm wondering about the group Know Thy Neighbor. Are they again publishing the people who have signed these this petition, or are they not doing it for this cycle?
No, I believe they. I don't know that they have the latest iteration up, but they have been publishing the signatures as they've been certified. It's an outfit that began in Boston, but there's a Jacksonville church that adopted the project here, and knowthyneighbor.com you know, people, I know a lot of people are using it because we get calls from people every now and then saying, you know, my name shows up on this and I never signed it. Or one woman who said her father, who had been, you know, confined to his bed for, you know, quite a substantial period of time, had shown up on the list, and she said it's absolutely impossible that he signed it. He's never, you know, he doesn't go out. And she said, I think they just took the church roster and submitted it. All those things may be true, but Know Thy Neighbor really has been. I think the folks who've brought it to Florida have been very responsible in encouraging people to use it as a tool to begin conversations, not to go after the people who signed it, but to really get people to understand what it does. And we had a volunteer who found her mother's name on that list and was able to have a real conversation with her mom. She ended up coming out, and her mother said, you know, let me find out how I can take my name off of that, and any way you want me to help, I will help to defeat this. So those are the kinds of conversations that are going to happen all over Florida to put a real human face to the impact. This literally takes away the few yet essential benefits and protections that people who either can't marry or choose not to for a variety of reasons, the few protections that they rely on are in jeopardy if we allow this to move forward without fighting back.
Well, I can say one thing for the Know Thy Neighbor campaign, and for those of you who are listening who might not be aware of it, it's an organization. You know, see, if you sign a petition, it's actually public information. What they're doing is publishing, and it's knowthyneighbor.org, I believe. It may be .com, but I believe it's knowthyneighbor.org. In any case, you can go there and type in your city, or you can type in a street name, or you can type in a county anywhere in Florida and find out who has signed it. I indeed found that my nephew's wife had signed it, and I spoke to her about it, and I discovered it was a technique that they were using to get people to sign it. There's and this is strongly promoted, and I'm sure Nadine will agree with me, by the Baptist Church in Florida. They're one of the main movers and shakers. Well, Baptist churches offer daycare. You don't have to be a member of the church to drop your kid off there, and you know, working mothers, the whole scenario, and you pay them, and they're less costly than using other child care and this sort of thing. But they got her to sign it because she was leaving her daughter there when she worked, and there was an implication. It wasn't an implication of harm to her child, but there were is an implication of what kind of mother are you? Sign this. By the way, we have your kid. There are all sorts of twisted ways to present this.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, and oftentimes people simply will sign the things that get put in front of them, not necessarily because they agree with them, but because they feel a little bit awkward. We've heard plenty of those kinds of stories. But really, to us, this is what it comes down to. We believe that the majority of Floridians, when they understand what this measure does, will vote against it. And so our only job really is to do that education, to do it certainly with media campaigns and radio and television and all those things, but we've really got to do it neighbor to neighbor, community by community, in a true grassroots effort all across the state. You know, and we belong, Equality Florida, we're part of the Fairness for All Families Coalition. We also belong to a federation of other state organizations. So we've talked to every state that's gone through the same kind of fight. And, you know, it's always intense. It's always grueling. But there's also wonderful opportunities to build a new level of engagement by the community. And we're already seeing that. In the space of just a few weeks, we saw more than 8,000 young people on campuses and through the social online network step up to be involved. I think this is really going to backfire as a wedge issue, and we can win it, but it's not inevitable, and we're going to have to do the things that it takes to win. But one of the things that the message that we've sent out to our sister organizations all over the country is this: in 2008, everybody's a Floridian. Everybody has something at stake in what happens in Florida. It is, of course, a traditional swing state, battleground state. But in this instance, we have a tremendous opportunity to defeat this, to finish the job Arizona began. And so we've called out to people and said, look, if you have retired relatives in Florida, if you have a niece or a nephew, an old, you know, an ex-girlfriend, ex-boyfriend, you know, anybody that you know in Florida, and everybody knows somebody in Florida, reach out to them. Get them involved. Get them engaged. Even if you think they're too conservative to be reached, talk to them anyway, because these are issues that hit so close to home. They hit at the very core of us. The ability to take care of the people we love. And it can transcend political party, ideology, whatever one people think of their religious beliefs might be. At the end of the day, why would we make it harder to take care of the people that we love? And that's what this amendment does. So I want to encourage folks, don't think of this as Florida's fight. Think of it as everybody's fight. And reach out to those people that you know who live in this state. Direct them to fairnessforallfamilies.org. Ask them to get involved. And in fact, as this gets closer, no matter where you live, there's an opportunity for you to volunteer in ways that are significant and will have a real impact.
Nadine, I have to ask about Charlie Crist's signature on this. You may not be willing to comment on this, being the nature of it, it was pretty much rumor, but there are all these rumors at the very beginning when he was just about to be elected our new Republican governor, at least here in Tallahassee anyway, about an ex-boyfriend, something about the boyfriend was a convicted felon and stole money from a nonprofit organization in Tallahassee, and that it was all hush-hush, and then there was some guy in South Florida who, a young fellow, said that he had slept with the governor, this sort of... Is this another example of a hypocritical Republican, or do you can you comment on this?
Well, I mean, I hear the same things everybody else hears, but I also have heard him say on a number of occasions he hasn't evaded the question. He answers very directly that it's not true. And I think to his credit, despite the disappointment we have that he signed it, he has been very clear in saying he doesn't think that the Republican Party ought to invest any money in this. When he was asked yesterday whether he would join the campaign to pass this, he said he had better things to do, didn't think it was a good use of time. I think he's a good example of somebody who, you know, out of sort of a knee-jerk reaction may have signed on to it, but upon closer examination and, you know, as I said, the wake-up call that Michigan and Kentucky and Ohio and other states have become, you know, realizes that this doesn't simply reaffirm longstanding Florida law in regard to same-sex marriage. It goes much, much further. And with a huge retirement population here in Florida, it's significant. You know, once widowed, many retirees, many seniors will not remarry for a variety of financial reasons. Well, frankly, just a variety of reasons, period. It's part of the reason that seniors were such an important factor in Arizona. Florida also has a large retirement community, a large senior population. And so I think that the governor's sort of ambivalence about this amendment is a good indicator of where many Floridians will go when they do understand the true scope of it. So on this issue, I think he's beginning to say the right things about it.
I see. So we're seeing him as more of an ally at this point. That's interesting. And he's indicating then that the Republican Party should not provide any additional funding. Didn't they already fund to the tune of, $150,000, or is it $300,000?
I believe it's $300,000. And, one of his early comments after being sworn in, you know, when this issue was raised, he said, I really don't think it's where the party ought to be putting its money, when he was asked.
Well, that's a wise statement, considering he's the governor in Florida. Yes. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly the head of the party, not the director, but certainly the leader of their party. And then again today or yesterday, but, you know, when asked, he said, I'd rather focus on teacher pay and other issues that are important issues, and just as importantly, he said, I'm a live and let live kind of guy, which, again, I think that they're, when people really understand what this means, they begin to say, you know, wherever I stand on any other issues, I really don't think the government ought to make it harder for people to take care of the people they care about. That's what this does. So on those, on that front, he is saying, I think in some ways he's almost like a focus group. I think that he is an indicator of where a lot of people in Florida are, and a good indicator why I think in the end we're going to win this.
Nadine, tell us about the group called Florida Red and Blue. I was not familiar with them until I began reading some of the news about the marriage amendment, and apparently they are not particularly surprised that they finally did accumulate all of the signatures required, and that they've amassed quite a bit of money to battle the amendment. Tell us about Florida Red and Blue. It's new to me.
Well, actually, I think it's a good indicator for us in Florida that there are so many organizations. I mean, more than 200 different organizations that are already lined up to fight this thing. Florida Red and Blue, NAACP, Equality Florida, groups all across the state. And, you know, it really isn't a surprise. I think the surprise was that they didn't make the number in 2006. You know, that had been their original goal, and they weren't able to get those numbers together. So we've been really trying to tell people for the last, you know, more than a year now, not to hold out hope that there's any way that this isn't going to get to the ballot. We're going to have to mount up and fight this battle. You know, Barbara Devane with Florida Alliance for Retired Americans, you know, I think she really said it well when she said, you know, what if these people deeply, you know, who call themselves Christian, who talk about this in religious terms, what if they'd actually put all of that energy, you know, over the past 4 years in amassing these signatures into doing something productive for our state, you know, feeding the hungry, working in the school system, helping people, rather than putting all of this energy into this very divisive, you know, attempt to embed discrimination in our Constitution. And I think these are the questions that we have to begin to pose to them. And so I think the Fairness for All Families Coalition, all of these organizations being up and ready so early to fight is a really strong sign that we have a real opportunity to win this. And we've got to engage as if we can win. And the polling tells us that there's a path to it. The polling tells us that Floridians, like most Americans, are beginning to wake up to this wedge issue. And I think that it's not inevitable, but people really do have to understand that this is ours to win.
Well, Nadine, in looking through the Family Research Council, some of the comments that were made in that and some other publications I've just recently looked at, apparently we're going to be hearing the phrase natural family a whole lot. Apparently they feel that this is going to strike the fear of God in us, that we have no way to combat, of course the inference being that we are an unnatural family. Have you begun to hear that phrase more often? You're more in tune.
I think we're going to hear a lot of pretty despicable things. You know, if you look around at some of the tactics that were used in other states, you know, we can expect them to throw everything with the kitchen sink at us rhetorically. But I also think they're treading on really dangerous and thin ice. When you look at the American family, it is not Ozzie and Harriet. It's a complicated, much more diverse pool of people, more blended families. There are a lot of young people who are together, committed, raising children, who are waiting later to get married. There are many, many seniors that after they're widowed do not remarry, but they are in long-term relationships, you know, decades after their first, you know, their spouse has died. And so there's a growing unmarried voter base out there that's not going to take kindly to having their families described in these really offensive and demonizing ways. So I think they're going to have to be really careful how they go after families and how they talk about families at a time when more and more people recognize family to be the people who look out for you, people to whom you are committed and responsible, the people that you love and care for, and the government should not get in the way of you fulfilling those obligations.
Well, regarding support, you have indicated that there is a long list of organizations who are already preparing themselves to fight against this and have spoken up that it is not where we want to go. Looking at the other side, looking at the the Florida for Marriage folks, exactly what groups are in their camp? I know of two, the Southern Baptists and a Catholic group. I'm not sure which group of Catholics. There may be more than I'm not. I grew up Protestant. I don't know a lot about the Catholics. Pardon me while I stumble. But who is in their camp?
Well, that's primarily it. It's the Christian Coalition. It's this Florida for Marriage, the Baptist Conference, Southern Baptist Conference, and I believe the Catholic Conference. Those are the groups at the forefront. There are some other organizations that have definitely been involved. A number of their leaders discredited in various ways. And, you know, you can kind of see some of the tensions internal to their coalition. But, you know, I mean, it's the usual suspects that one might expect. A handful of far-right organizations that have a church network that they rely on. But again, you know, I know one of our volunteers who goes to a Catholic church saw that the petitions were being circulated and went to the priest afterwards and said, you know, I really want you to know how this affects my family. And he listened, and next Sunday there were no petitions on church property. And I think that this is, you're going to find a number of folks who signed because it was too awkward not to. People who signed because they didn't think very clearly or thoroughly about the impact of it. People who signed because they were just lied to about how far this measure goes. And to the degree that we're able to educate people and shine the spotlight on what this does, I believe that there are going to be a whole lot of folks even folks who've signed that, who come election day, are going to vote no. And actually, let me highlight one other thing. I think I made sure that to direct people to fairnessforallfamilies.org. But I also want to point out one of the challenges that we do face, and that is wrong-way voting. Our polling tells us that there are a whole lot of people who think this is a bad amendment that will be confused and will vote the wrong way. And so it's really important that when we talk about this amendment, and we talk about the harm that it does, that we are certain to make sure that fair-minded Floridians understand that the right vote is a no vote, a vote against it, opposition to this amendment. So we can't say it enough, vote no, vote no, vote no, to stop this bad amendment from harming in very real ways Florida families.
Well, Nadine, you've made a powerful statement about those of us who are still involved in mainstream churches to actually say something. In looking through some of Florida for Marriage, some of their information on the website, they have a pastor's marriage amendment action kit, which they gladly send out to churches. And unless a pastor knows, there are alternate versions of how this should go down in their congregation. I'm very heartened to hear that the priest pulled that information. It's a strong statement that we need to be more visible, which is exactly what they do not want us to be. As time goes by, they're finding out more and more that we're regular, everyday, next-door people, and I think it really worries them.
Well, you know, we're working with the same research firm that helped to do the work in Arizona, Lake Research. And one of the things that they stress about this particular issue, unlike, say, property tax or redistricting or any other issues where you really have to do the job of explaining what the issue is. Floridians know what family is. Floridians know what marriage is. People have their own understanding of what these words mean and in emotional connections to them. And so this is why it's not simply a matter of explaining this issue. We have to connect this issue for people. We have to make sure that they understand the consequences of it. A lot of people, if they simply think it's reaffirming what Florida law already says, you know, they may be a bit indifferent to it. They may not vote on it at all. But when they understand that it actually takes away rights and blocks protections that the majority of Floridians, just like the majority of Americans, support, that's the point where we're going to see people rejecting that, rejecting the amendment, voting no. And that's going to happen from having conversations. We started this house party program, and all across the state, people are throwing house parties. They're inviting their friends, their neighbors, and they're having conversations that they might not ordinarily have. People who never consider themselves political, being able to talk about how this would affect, you know, my family, your family, if we had no ability to access, you know, these most basic and essential protections, being able to make healthcare decisions, being able to be with the person you love in the hospital, because Florida's constitution forbids any recognition of a relationship other than marriage. That is something that when people hear those stories on a very human level, I don't care what political affiliation they have, how conservative a denomination they belong to, on a very human level, people believe in fairness, and we've just got to tap, that decency within people, that recognition of what would you do if suddenly the law forbade you from being able to be with the person you love in the time of greatest need. And so we've got to tell those stories, we've got to talk to each other, and we've got to engage in a real grassroots way and not assume any part of the state is off limits for those conversations. People think, I grew up in North Florida. Some people think North Florida's way, you know, too conservative, people won't listen. But I ended up in a conversation with someone who I would think people would have just sort of assumed that this was a conservative, older person. And in the midst of my conversation, he said, well, I think I fit that category because, you know, I've been with my lady friend now for over 10 years, and I wouldn't want the government telling me that she and I are not family to one another. So when we engage people in real ways, past all of the slogans and, you know, all of the rhetoric, and just engage them in very human ways, they're going to stand up. They're going to vote no. And that's our job. And that's why we need people contributing their time, contributing their money, getting involved. And, you know, we've got between now and November to do that education. So we need everybody, all hands on deck. This is a critical fight. The whole country is watching what we do here in Florida, and you can be part of making history, and we need you. So, you know, go to fairnessforallfamilies.org. Send us an email. If you belong to an organization, get your organization to join the coalition. You can join as an individual, and you'll be invited to events in your area. You'll be asked to volunteer and consider holding a house party. Invite the people in your unique circle of influence to hear about what this amendment does, why we need to band together to defeat it, and let's make history in 2008.
Well, Nadine, I have to say to you, I have to admire you for your ability to remain calm and rational and open to communicating with people and changing hearts and changing minds. It's what has to happen, of course. Doing a show like this, I tend to get wrapped up in kind of an almost militant anger. And I'm probably not, you know, if there's a reason that you do what you do and I do what I do, because I tend to get but I'm just so proud of you. And you showed that too when your group spoke in front of the Values Voters Summit. We ran that audio and prior to the show. And Nadine, you've been a wonderful guest.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on the show, and we've got a long campaign ahead, so hopefully we'll be back and be able to keep updating you on how things are going.
Well, Nadine, that would be very much appreciated, and I must tell you, you don't have to wait for an invitation. I'll send you an email with all of the correct information, but you're welcome to phone into this radio program any evening, Monday through Friday, and I will put you on the air right away. As quick, I mean, obviously, if there's a guest on, I won't be able to do it immediately. But we want to hear from you. Please consider Strictly Confidential and the Head On Radio Network a partner in this. I can safely say that.
Well, Peter, thank you so much, and thanks to all your listeners. Go to fairnessforallfamilies.org and be a part of it.
Thank you so much, Nadine. That's Nadine Smith, everyone, and Nadine is with Equality Florida, a wonderful guest, calm, rational, everything that I'm not. So as we go to a top of the hour break, I am Peter Godbold. This is Strictly Confidential. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. Rings in West Virginia. And we'll be right back after the top of the hour break.
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. He's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears' Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
As time goes by.
Gay and transgender people are part of every community.
We are your neighbors, your co-workers, your family.
If someone you know comes out, be willing to listen.
You have the power to make a difference by treating others with dignity and respect.
Choose to be an ally and a friend.
Find out how. Go to glad.org. That's GLAAD.org.
I apologize if it makes you feel bad. Self-confidence, the way I take it all.
And there we have Miss Hazel Dean in all of her fabulousness. She does a wonderful remake. It's a extended dance floor version of The Winner Takes It All, not the ABBA version, but I'll have to run that for you guys one evening. So, let's see, I've given out the phone numbers. I forgot to do that before the guest. I'm sorry if I neglected to let anyone give out the number prior. I had said you could call in and talk to Nadine. Hopefully we'll have her back on the show at some point in the future. And again, the telephone number is 877, the number 4, head on. And getting back to the theme of Huckabee is the devil, which I'm absolutely convinced that he is the devil, I have some comments that he made in front of the Voter Values Summit, which took place in October of this year. This was a very conservative, right-wing, fundamentalist group that he was speaking to. His comments go on for a little while here, but I'm just going to go through some of the paragraphs and bring out some of the highlights. I'm thoroughly convinced that this guy is going to be a lot of trouble, and I'm also at this point convinced he is, in fact, going to be their guy. He's playing well to the Christian fundies, and the Christian fundies have caught on to the fact that he has to back down regarding his anti-gay and lesbian speech. When he was introduced at the Values Voters Summit, he was introduced, the fellow said to him, he attracted the largest percentage of vote ever received by a Republican gubernatorial nominee in Arkansas, and was reelected to another four-year term in November of 2002. They pointed out that Governing Magazine named him as one of the public officials of the year of 2005, and Time Magazine honored him as one of the five best governors in America. That was a total shock to me. I had no idea. When he left office in January of 2007, it said in his introduction, he went on a nationwide tour to promote his fifth book, From Hope to Higher Ground, The 12 Stops to Restoring America's Greatness. And, of course, there's always the chuckle. He enjoys playing bass guitar, and his rock and roll band is called Capital Offense. He's open for several big names. I can't imagine who. They're not pointed out here. He also points out that he opened and played at two presidential inauguration balls. I'm just wondering which ones. I just can't imagine. Oh, my. We have a caller we're going to take in just a second. One of his opening remarks he made to the group is, I don't know if you've been keeping up. Some of you have been traveling to get here, but a little over a week ago, Al Gore was given the Nobel Peace Prize. The room breaks up in laughter. He then says, you may not have heard, today there's been a glitch in the fact that they think they may have to withhold the award. It turns out that some of the ballots in Florida are still waiting to be counted. And, of course, the room erupted in laughter, and he immediately follows that there's a new wave of baby boomers who are going into the system. 10,000 baby boomers a day are going to sign up for Social Security, and if you think that's bad economic news, wait till the old hippies find out they can get free drugs from the federal government. Again, the room roared with laughter. He then moves on into more serious topics, which I'll share with you in just a moment. But for right now, we have Preston. Preston, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hey, Peter.
Good evening to you.
Good evening. Those were some interesting, revealing quotes there from Huckabee.
Yes. He's got a million of them, apparently. He's as slick as grease on a linoleum floor. I got to tell you, he's been doing this governor bit for a long, long time. And public relations for the Robinson fellow, what was his name, the Christian fundy from the CNN, or not CNN, the CBN, Christian Broadcasting.
Really? I didn't know that. Who was doing the public relations for CBN?
Let's see. Now, that was back in the day. I mentioned earlier, let's see where I have the note here. At the very beginning of his career, before he was governor of Arkansas, he was the public relations fellow for the Robinson fellow. I'm still looking for the reference. I'm sure I have it here some I'll find it at some point during the conversation.
You know, that's okay. I got the gist of it. Public relations, that is an industry that the American people need to take a close look at. And I think, as with so many things, it could be a force for good or evil. And, you know, PR, it was founded. Its founding was very interesting. Someone named Edward Bernays was very into behavioral psychology, was a nephew of Sigmund Freud's, actually. And he talked about how to engineer consent. And he applied his insights into psychology and human emotions to advance the sales of cigarette industry and help out Guatemalan dictators when the United Fruit Company was pillaging that country, and you know, that sort of thing. And I think today it's been picked up by some other very powerful, elite, very rich forces that are dividing the people. And you say it's kind of like being like the devil. I think that's, you know, metaphorically speaking, that's to divide people, to manipulate them. Yeah, that's very demonic activity, for sure.
Well, it is, Preston, and I have to say that this fellow strikes me as being George Bush with a brain, which means the damage won't be as random. It will be far more focused, and he also has quite a lot to say about our borders. He's all in favor of building the fence. And he's quite big on the illegal aliens in the United States are causing it. And also he's big on what he calls Islamo-fascism. It's one of his huge points.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, Bush doesn't use that term anymore. And, you know, in some ways, at least in his rhetoric, Bush is more moderate than some of these other elements of the right wing that's been developing in this country. And so, yeah, to hear him using that phrase is a shame. And yeah, but to pitch himself, you know, with the guitar and the band and everything, trying to pick up on the, I don't know, Clinton used that with the saxophone, and you know, trying to sell this likable part of himself. And lately his discussions, it's been him and Mitt Romney debating who's more, you know, godly or whatever. Not much about policy. And certainly, I mean, you do more digging into his actual comments and associations than, you know, 90% of the news media. So I appreciate your work on this. And I also appreciated your interview with Nadine,
yes.
Yeah. She made some much more useful remarks. I liked what she said about reaching out to everybody, including those people who seem so conservative as to be unreachable. But and in some ways, I mean, it can be like running your head against a brick wall, but there's this quote that I like to keep in mind when I'm feeling that kind of frustration and distance from some people. And Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was a mixed bag himself but a former Supreme Court justice, he said, one's mind, once stretched by a new idea, never goes back to its original dimensions. And even those people who in a way can't be reached and may still vote for something like this, for them to at least know that there's opposition, that there are opposing sides, there are coherent arguments against it, and, you know, to let them know that even their neighbor may be gay, you know, and, you know, we're living human beings, you know, and just anything to confront the dehumanization that goes on in campaigns like this. And it's distressing to hear that 600,000 people, you know, voted for this amendment. Is that right?
Well, yes, they had to gather 600,000 signatures. You see, in Florida, a few years back, the minimum, you had to get 40% of the number of registered voters in order to get an amendment on the ballot. So the Republicans decided that what they wanted to do was raise the goal much higher so that these underrepresented minorities would have a far greater time getting any sort of an amendment on the ballot. So they raised it to 60%, which is a huge number. And in fact, it, even with all the churches involved in this, it's taken Marriage for Florida group, whoever they are, those people, it's taken them almost 4 years to get the 600,000 signatures. So in a way, they were trying to deny the people in Florida the ability to put an amendment or a petition for an amendment on. But so what they did was they couldn't come up with the required number of votes in the last election, so they let them go ahead and roll over and continue to do it. So over a period of 4 years, they finally did it.
Oh, my gosh. And 4 years, an infusion of, you know, from concentrated money sources like the Christian Coalition juggernaut, the big PR firm essentially disguising itself as some sort of Christian movement. And
absolutely.
And also the misleading verbiage of the petition, I'm sure. I mean, right now in Colorado, we've got a petition going around that evokes civil rights, and it sounds like something very progressive and, you know, something that would poll well. But, to be honest, I don't remember if it's an anti-gay or if it's an anti-abortion thing, but it was that same tactic of using this language, couching it in kind of progressive terms to get something very reactionary on the ballot. And I do know we have a vote coming up regarding that would criminalize more abortions. It would give, like, the fetus civil rights kind of thing. So that's a big battle. And just the hypocritical posturing of it all, too. I mean, to choose these issues that are so nuanced, complex, you know, and depending on the person's circumstances, and for them to just say, we're the force of good, they're bringing this evil, you know, they're anti-life, we're the anti-lifers, basically, and anti-marriage people, it's just so unfair. And again, I don't know, the term has its utility, I think.
Well, certainly it does. It's a great descriptive word. I mean, I get really tired. I rarely elevate anyone to the status of devil. I often elevate people to the state of one of the antichrists, but rarely do I ever say that someone is the devil himself. I think that Huckabee may very well be. He is leading the churches, which should be espousing the message of Christ. He's leading them. He's their leader now, and they're all cheering for him. And anyone any thinking, loving person is horrified by it. Yet, it's all about their values. And
it's like that term fascist. You know, people are very hesitant to use it, and sometimes it can be hurled as pejorative and not really substantiated. But if fascism means the marriage of business and government, what else do you describe what we have going on here? If you can't use the term fascism, I mean, free market sounds, again, it sounds so nice. Free market is against free, right? But this is a fascist movement. And if you can't use that term, they've muzzled you. And if people want to go to theological terms, fine. Let's talk about devil and hell and, the gospel. Actually, Bob pulled up a useful reference to, I think, the letters of St. Paul or something like that, the letters of Paul, I don't know. But there's some very useful interpretations of the Bible that the Christian Coalition is hiding from people. It's like when Constantine in the Roman Empire, you know, Christianity was this radical revolutionary movement, very anti-militaristic, and the Roman Empire, of course, was all about military aggression. And they kept, you know, putting down the Christians, the real ones, and finally they co-opted the movement, and Constantine declared it the official religion of the Roman Empire. And that's when its meaning was turned on its head. And now you have people like Hugh Hewitt writing books about Christianity. And he basically listened to his radio show. And if people like it or dislike it, whatever, what he does is advocate for war constantly and bigger military budgets. And he gossips about people and bears false witness constantly. And it's really, I don't know. Also, before I forget, I think last week we were talking about Bernie Ward and that.
Yes, we were. That was and I'm not sure what became of that. The issue, I don't know where that sits now.
I don't either. But I think I had mentioned something about another radio host from Air America who I thought maybe would be at that station. And I actually rethought that. And I think I was confusing KGO in San Francisco with, I think it's KOGO in San Diego. And that's the station where this host was going to go to, not to the big San Francisco one. So I just wanted to clear that up. I wasn't accurate on that.
I see. Oh, I see. Yes, we did. We did talk about a host from Air, and I remember that now. We certainly did.
I was trying to be hopeful and thinking that maybe they weren't just trying to silence a progressive voice. Maybe they put forth this other progressive voice, but that's a different media battle in the southern part of the state of California. But anyway. But the media issue, I was also thinking about media issues when Nadine was speaking. I mean, again, I think, she seems like she's, everybody knows Pat Robertson, the Christian Coalition, Ralph Reed, all these figures of religiosity that, few people know the names of Nadine Smith and, many others. The person at Sojourners, his name escapes me right now, but, Jim Wallace.
Yes, that's is it Mel White?
Mel White.
He's he maybe was Soul Force. I get confused. There's several wonderful though organizations that are actually very progressive, but you never hear their voices. Christian organizations, I'm saying.
Yeah. Although, as I say that, I kind of have to catch myself and be grateful for the places where they are being heard. For instance, Air America Radio has a show on the weekends called State of Belief, and that's all about.
Yes, they do. I've only had the occasion to listen to it a couple of times, but it was a very interesting show. Is the show still doing well?
I believe so. I don't catch it often, but. As far as I know, it's still going. But on top of that, actually, Jesse Jackson also has a weekend show, Keep Hope Alive Radio. And, he's very gay-friendly. And there's been a lot of division between those communities. Another way these PR agents divide us is that they'll use these rhetorical ploys by saying things like, the gays, they think their movement's like the civil rights movement. How dare they say something like that? They choose to be gay. That might be their line of argument. And, you are black. You didn't have a choice. And you had hoses after you. And so they'll be like, you must really resent that. I mean, you could hear these hosts planting these attitudes into people's heads. And so then there's this division that develops between African-American community and the gay community. They pit people like the African-American community and the Jewish community against each other, environmentalists and the labor movement. And it's really just repulsive. It's something else. They see it as...
Look, it seems to be, Preston, it's interesting that you mentioned that. It seems to be a lost part of history that Coretta King, his wife, Martin Luther King's wife, actually forged alliances with various LGBT organizations back in the day, and partnerships to advance equal rights for both. And yet today, the shadow of meanness has moved across the country, and today it's all about you didn't have to sit in the back of the bus, and you didn't have to have a separate drinking fountain. We've become so petty and stupid and dumbed down, I don't recognize the country anymore.
Yeah, it can feel very alienating, and it can be just sad, just really sad to see it unfold. But again, the Bible says, seek and you shall find. And you dig around a little bit, and I'm constantly discovering and discovering again all these different projects, like Nadine's, and I know Sojourners that are working on developing a radio studio or something. So, you know, I don't know. There's some progress here and there.
There are bright spots. There are bright spots between, and it's mostly the mainstream media that is blaring out the stuff that curdles our blood, you know, mixed in with Paris Hilton specials and all that sort of thing. But it's nice to have a bright spot. Nadine was one of those. She remains positive. I wouldn't be able to do her work. I'd be alienating people left and right, screaming and yelling. I'm not very diplomatic when I take things personally, and often I do take things personally.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, part of this way they pit us against each other. I came across this quote from an anarchist philosopher. And, you know, this is just one thought, but, again, talk about a group that we've been trained to have a prejudice against. You know, you just say the word anarchy, and it's like, oh, my God, that's illegal.
And that is socialist.
Yeah, but it's basically a theory of questioning authority. And sometimes authority can justify itself, but oftentimes it's not. And Alexander Berkman, could I read this quote from him real quick?
Absolutely.
Oh, great. It's, he said, you stand for the authority of priest and preacher because you think they can call down the wrath of God upon your head. You know, and I think there's some truth to that in a way. But you submit to the domination of boss, judge, and government because of their power to deprive you of work, to ruin your business, to put you in prison. So authority rules your whole life, the authority of the past and the present, of the dead and the living, and your existence is a continuous invasion and violation of yourself, a constant subjugation to the thoughts and the will of someone else. And as you are so invaded and violated, so you subconsciously revenge yourself by invading and violating others over whom you have authority or can exercise compulsion, physical or moral. In this way, all life has become a crazy quilt of authority, of domination and submission, of command and obedience, of coercion and subjection, of rulers and ruled, of violence and force in 1,001 forms. That's Alexander Berkman. Yeah.
Well said. Yeah. Very good quote. Very appropriate, too. Preston, you have a way of bringing up very appropriate things. And by the way, was it you that mentioned Sicko? Was it you that told me about that the other week?
I don't know. I may have.
It may have been someone else, not sure, but in any case, I had not seen it yet, and it turned out to be remarkable. I had no idea that they had focused so much time dealing with Canadian and European and both France and England, the medical system. I thought it was entirely about him taking some people down to Cuba because they couldn't get treatment in the U.S., which, of course, is a valid topic. I just didn't realize It's really a mind-boggling movie. It really is an eye-opener.
That I'm hearing a lot of good things. In fact, I was recently on Amazon looking at the customer reviews of it, and somebody wrote, headlined her review. It said, "I'm a diehard conservative, but this movie was really powerful." And she wrote a very good and positive review of it. Even somebody at Fox News gave it a positive review. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing it. And actually, there's a part of that movie in what Huckabee was talking about, which, you know, brought to my mind a potential division that's probably takes place already, and that would be of the gay community here feeling, and rightfully so, resentment towards the Cuban government, because what they did was very much what Huckabee was talking about. They separated the gay community, AIDS, people with AIDS, from the rest of society. And I don't know where that stands now. And, hopefully, I mean, I remember that from like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And I suspect the way that it was covered was not fairly, you know, certainly not completely. And they're always trying to make Cuba look bad, but there are certainly human rights abuses in Cuba. There's no doubt about that, and they deserve to be criticized for it. But having said that, there is a lot about the Cuban community, the society, that is very progressive. And I remember the writer, Barbara Kingsolver, she went there with her two young daughters, and she said she'd never felt so safe in a country alone with her children as she did in Cuba. And, you know, she's traveled all over the world. So, and they're doing some remarkable things on healthcare. I found this movie called Salud, which is health in Spanish, and Jimmy Carter is in it and other people. And they talk about some of the remarkable things they've accomplished in spite of a brutal economic embargo and several terrorist attacks from the U.S., from Miami exiles, Cuban exiles living in Miami, who shot down Cuban planes and poisoned cattle and blew up hotels and so on and so forth. They held on to their belief in their movement, and it's been remarkable. So,
well, that's and again, please repeat the name of that again, please.
That film is called Salud, S-A-L-U-D. That one's going to be hard to get. I wish it was at Netflix. At some point, I'm going to write them and request that they get it. And they've got a website that'll give you a good feel for it, called saludthefilm.net. They've got a great kind of intro into the movie. But as with a lot of kind of progressive efforts, there's some problems regarding distribution. And the DVD is kind of expensive, and a friend of mine is having a hard time getting a hold of hers, and so I just gave away my last copy to Jenna Bush. That was one of the things about her talk the other day here in Denver, is that, you know, you got to go up to her and get a book signed and say hello, and she said volunteering in Latin America changed her life, and I thought she'd be curious to see what Cuba is doing regarding healthcare in poor parts of the world. So she said she was looking forward to watching it. So maybe she can get to her dad.
Well, that would be quite a feat. no one seems to have ever done that before. People often pick up the pieces from his broken toys.
Right.
Nobody ever gets to him. He's,
yeah, well, forget her dad. Maybe she'll just do her own thing and connect with other people she can reach. But she can, yeah, well, anyway, it's, I was thinking people like Nadine getting their voices out. Do you know anything about Al Gore's channel at all? he put some money into developing a different kind of network on TV.
Well, you know, Preston, I recall reading something about that, and since the only video I see are you know things that I see on the internet and Netflix, I don't really do television anymore. I began screaming really loudly and scaring the dog, so I had to kind of give it up. But yes, there was some talk about an alternate news network, and maybe with an environmental slant. Was that the case?
I wasn't really sure what it was going to be, and I'd heard a couple of fleeting comments about it, but I really didn't know what it actually had turned into. And then someone said, I heard someone mention it, they said that something about viewers making a lot of the content. Well, I just got satellite TV about a month or two ago, and it has a station, which I think is the one that Gore was behind, and it's called Current. And it's like shows made by the viewers, and they'll be like 5 minutes long or maybe 10 minutes long. And it's a whole mix of different stuff. I mean, it'll be people in our ghettos making their own little short movies. One person did a movie about Stanley Tukey Williams, the former Crip who was executed a couple of years ago. He had really transformed his own life. I mean, prison had actually served its goal of rehabilitation. And Tukey Williams had been writing children's books and counseling, you know, gang members and things like that. They executed him anyway. It was a real sin. But anyway, so people will do a little movie of that, send it into Current, and do a 10-minute movie on that. Organic farmers, they've been covered. People will do other kind of more lighthearted stuff, you know, on fashion or whatever, maybe a comedy type thing. But recently there was somebody who did a video movie on a victory in Thailand regarding the rights of transgendered people. And this guy who dressed as a woman and was beautiful, he was working with a clothing store or something, and then he was outside of his job. And I don't remember, something like, oh, he wasn't allowed into a club because he was dressed like a woman wearing makeup and everything. Well, they turned it got front page. They turned it into a movement for the transgender community. Apparently there in Thailand, it's pretty open and accepted. And one thing led to another, and he got an apology from the club, and it even got instituted, rights for transgender people got instituted in their constitution. And he got to eat with, like, the president or prime minister of Thailand and all this stuff.
Wow. Happy endings. You don't hear those kind of happy endings on this side of the world. That's an
amazing story. Exactly. So, again, as cynical and hopeless and despairing as I can feel at times, there are these other realities of the world that keep coming, you know, into my, you know, my awareness. And, yeah, so there it is. We have our moments.
We do indeed. Preston, thank you very much for such an interesting call. You are a valued caller, as they say.
My pleasure.
I believe, yeah, it's in business they say you're a valued customer, but you're not really that kind of relationship. But we always enjoy hearing from you.
Well, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Peter. Have a nice evening.
Thank you. You too. Good evening to you, Preston. That was our friend Preston in Denver, who always has a very enlightened view on just about any subject. I'm not sure if we still have Jim on the line. Jim was on hold, and Jim, are you still with us?
I'm still with you.
Ah, welcome to the show. Hi, Jim.
Good evening. How are you?
I am fine. I'm holding together pretty well. Sometimes my papers fly across the room, and I skip a step or two, but mostly I'm in sync.
Well, that's how you get back into step, is you skip a step, is, you know, when you learn how to march, right?
Yeah. Yeah, sort of like that skip jump, yeah.
FM-22-5, the old field marshal, the field manual for close water drill. That's what you have to do. You have to skip a step. You know, there's one thing, as far as I was just thinking about what Preston said, he always does bring a lot of good
He does.
Listen to. He really is. And, but, you know, as far as the two things I want to say, the first is, and I guess we live in a very confrontational world, and I'm just wondering if assimilation is a superior method to confrontation.
Well,
it takes a little bit longer, too.
There's something to be said for assimilation. There's also a loss. Assimilation also implies loss of culture and sometimes loss of tradition. Sometimes it's a trade-off. So much is lost in assimilation.
You know, one thing I've always said, you know, they've been overrun by so many people. And the Chinese key to it was, they said, okay, even though you may break down through the wall of China and whatever and come into our country, we always manage to win in the end because we assimilate. And throughout history, assimilation has become a very valuable tool in dealing with an enemy. Chinese have a very unique philosophy on dealing with things like that. They really do. And I think
really? I don't know.
I think
tell me.
Definitely profit by looking at their model. And also one of their warriors, Sun Tzu. And when you're ever dealing with an adversary, you have to get inside his head and think exactly the way he does if you get to the point of confrontation on the battlefield. The Art of War. And it's definitely a book that should be read by everyone, I think, when engaging upon an adversarial situation. You have to think exactly the way your enemy does. And you have to put yourself in his place, and you have to do what he does.
Well, I just have to come right out and say it. I regard Bush as an enemy because of his stances on society and the fact that he's blown the economy. I can't put myself in his position. Maybe if I were from some other spiritual indoctrination, you know, maybe a Buddhist or something, I could do that easier.
Well,
it's hard for me, though.
You have to think the way they do, though, Peter. You really do. You have to think exactly the way they do, because therein lies the key to their undoing, if you are to be successful. That's something I've always, I've been taught that all my life, and that's something I've always believed in.
Well, it's an interesting point when you think about it, to be able to beat them or to triumph, because it seems that's exactly what the Democratic Party is not doing. We never seem to quite understand. We always are running in defense mode from them.
Well, you know, there are all types of ways to skin a cat, and we may try to build all these defense mechanisms and fortifications in our own doctrine. But anything that is built as far as a fortification is concerned could be overrun. I mean, it's like General Patton once said about fixed fortifications. Hell, if people can overrun mountains and air, and see, they can run anything a man is still.
I have to laugh at that, Jim, because the first thing that pops into my head is the wall between us and Mexico. Oh, that'll help. It will enrich Halliburton. Isn't Halliburton one of the contractors for that? And by the way, Jim, have they actually started building that damn thing yet?
Oh, no.
What is the deal?
I don't know.
I don't either.
No. And another thing, as far as the Art of War is concerned, hey, you're not going to get anywhere if you have to die for your country. You're going to have to make that dumb son of a bitch die for his country. You know? That's just my own view as far as practical means of combating any adversary in any situation. I mean, you make him die for his territory. and you don't pay for the same real estate twice.
Well, interesting. I'm trying to integrate that into my thoughts regarding Iraq, and it seems to me that we are intentionally attempting to make their real estate ours, what with the military bases and all the things that we're doing to prolong it. I'm trying to integrate those thoughts.
It's a war of attrition, and, you know, as I was, I think I mentioned this to Bob Kincaid earlier, you know, it would appear, at least from the eyes of Mirtha, who was against the war. Well, we're there, and we're going to have to do the best we can with it and do the best we can to remove ourselves from it, and I think we can. And I mean, we don't have any other choice. I mean, we've gotten involved with Tar Baby and stuck to us, and we're there. We made a very serious mistake in getting involved in that thing. I mean, we couldn't profit by the mistakes of Vietnam. We couldn't profit by the mistakes of the Soviets when they went into Afghanistan, which was ultimately their denouement, or led to their fall, because the war was just a war of attrition. And I'm hoping that eventually we can extricate ourselves from that position in the most expeditious manner possible. That being said, expeditious, that's the operational word.
Well, Mike Huckabee says in one of his quotes that somewhere in the stack that I'll eventually get to, if not tonight, I'll get to it later, that if he's elected president, that in 10 years, Jim, in only 10 short years, you too, in 10 years, he's saying that we can tell the Saudis and the Iraqis and the Kuwaitis that they can keep their sand and their oil too, because we won't need it. In only 10 short years, you believe that?
I hope he's right. I hope we can become energy dependent. And, you know, I hope he is. I mean, I hope we can. I think that will be the key to it, because that's the very stranglehold they have on us. I mean, that's their ace in the hole. And
yeah.
If they lose that, then what else do they have? I mean,
well, all I know is we've spent the money in the cookie jar, and I don't know how we're going to develop these technologies. We basically sold everything off to the rest of the world. The only thing we have left are the corporate headquarters of companies that the talents overseas, to a large degree, not of course all true.
Well, you know, one thing about it, Peter, is now their natural resources, their oil and stuff like that, that is a very finite resource. It's not going to last forever. It's not.
No, but they're estimating about 30 years, and I think they want to drag it out till every last drop is gone and the oil dynasties get all the cash.
They probably do, but I mean, I'm sure there are other technologies at work that we can use, things of that nature, and I think people are becoming aware of that, because we don't want to become a dependent nation upon the will of a few sheikhs and emirates and things of that nature. And I think that if the price of oil goes up and gasoline goes up, we're going to realize, hey, maybe we need to pursue an alternate course, and maybe we need not to be so energy dependent. I think we're being driven to that. We don't want to be, because it's become so convenient.
Yeah, it has become very convenient.
I had this incident today. You wouldn't believe this. I had pulled up at the filling station at the Kroger, and I waited for 5 minutes to get into there. And this other man was going to whip in there and get ahead of me.
That was a Tawanda moment. Do you know what I'm talking about? Remember the movie?
And I said, you know, I have more insurance than you do. And, you know, I basically just said, no. And I got out of my car, and I told that man, I said, look, I said, I hope you have a good Russian novel to read. Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, whatever, because that's how long we're going to be here, because I'm not going to move.
Well, he obviously had no idea who he was talking to.
Because he backed up, and the son of a bitch saluted me.
Oh, for crying out loud. Was it an insulting salute? Like,
no, it wasn't. And I just saluted him back very smartly.
I don't think I've ever been saluted. That's hard for me to wrap my head around.
I have. We have different backgrounds, Peter. You and I are very, very diverse. And, you know, it's amazing. We even have civil conversations sometimes, but we do. And that's the great thing about this radio, and that's the great thing about what's going on here at the Horn. And, you know, that's the reason I call back and the reason I've always called you back, even though we don't always agree on a lot of things. But, yeah, you know, hell, I was determined, you know, Tawanda is going to assimilate and is going to say, look, I was here first. You know I was here first. And I'm not going to back down.
Well, for some reason, what you said at some point, I had to chuckle. It reminded me of my conversation with Nadine earlier when I was saying to her that I surely could not do her job because I get a little bit upset. I was glad I didn't point out to her that my philosophy is that if I were the king of the world, I would require every Republican to submit a written apology prior to ever being allowed to vote again. I don't think that would go over very well.
No,
in one of
that's not the policy of assimilation. You know, you have to basically, well, assimilation is what it is, and it is a very effective tool. It really is. And the Chinese have proved that to time immemorial. They have. They've been overrun by so many people, so many countries, and yet they've always taken them in. And, you know, so many other nations, even in their own way, defeated the Roman Empire that way. Because the Roman Empire realized, hey, you know, what they have is better than what we have. And, you know, maybe we can learn from these people.
Yeah.
Even to the point of when Constantine was confronted with Maxentius in their battle, and he saw the sign from heaven, and Christianity became the religion of the empire.
Well, I was about to say, one of the things that prevents us from learning from other people is this idea that God's on our side, and so we have nothing to learn from other people, because we are the chosen people. It seems to be becoming more and more pervasive, and I think the whole concept's despicable.
It is, indeed. I don't like that at all, because we can always learn from someone else, and when you refuse to learn from someone else, that in itself will prove to be your own denouement. I mean, that has been proved throughout history. It really has been. And there's one other thing I want to tell you about.
Okay, because we are coming up on top of the hour, but we have about 30 seconds left, and I need to do the exit.
Right. You played the song by Level 42 the other night.
Yes, yes.
It's a marvelous remake of another song I did called Something About You.
Really, I don't know that track. I'll have to be on the lookout for it. Something About You, Level 42.
Heard it. Over Energy 90.7 in San Francisco, and it is absolutely a beautiful piece of music.
Wonderful. I'll make a note of it. And Jim, thank you so much for calling. I'm glad you're holding up well in the holidays, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, Peter, you take care.
Thank you. Good evening, sir.
Good night.
And that was our good night. And that was our friend Jim from an undisclosed undisclosed southern build something along the lines of Tara somewhere in North Carolina. I've enjoyed being with you this evening, and it's so nice to be back. We're not going to do a horn section this evening, and as you know, this is John's day off, because actually it's already Saturday for John down in Australia. So we're going to skip the horn section, and John's show will be a replay. I want to remind you that Billy Shears is on tomorrow night. He's at 9 p.m., and I don't know exactly the scheduling of the other shows, but we have Rick Goodner with Rick's Place, and we have Matt Sowards also, all three wonderful shows that run on Saturday evenings here on the Head On Radio Network. And God bless. Thank you for being here. Here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush could be getting an additional $70 billion from Congress to fight the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Democratic lawmakers say they have no other choice in order to finalize a budget for the fiscal year. A mandate for U.S. troops to return from Iraq by late 2008 will not be part of that package. President Bush vetoed the second consecutive bill that would have expanded government-provided health insurance for children. An earlier similar bill was also vetoed because Mr. Bush said both pieces of legislation had fundamental flaws. Another veto may be in the offing for an upcoming energy bill, as Senate Democrats refuse to remove language that slashes tax breaks for big oil and gas companies. The bill passed the House last week, expected to pass the Senate on Thursday. President Bush maintains that the legislation unfairly targets the oil industry. Former CIA directors George Tenet and Porter Goss will testify in a congressional probe focused on destruction of interrogation videotapes of terror suspects. The two men have become key figures in an expanding investigation into the possible cover-up of harsh interrogation techniques described by some as torture. Meantime, current CIA Director Michael Hayden says he had limited knowledge in the matter, but that his agency could have done a much better job in keeping Congress informed about how those tapes were handled. A human rights investigator who visited Guantanamo Bay prison last week is debating whether detainees' lawyers could mount an adequate defense. During today's address to the UN Human Rights Council, Martin Shannon said his attendance at a hearing for an accused Al-Qaeda guard illustrated a series of